It's KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. 2 years ago, an interview with the president of the NAACP in Spokane went global.
This man right here is your father? Right there?
You have a question about that?
Yes, ma'am. Okay. I was wondering if if your dad really is an African-American man.
That's a very... I don't know what you're implying.
Are you African-American?
I don't understand the question of... I did tell you that, yes, that's my dad. And he was unable to come in January.
Are your parents... are they white?
Rachel Dolezal would acknowledge that she identifies as a black woman, but that biologically she is Caucasian. And since that was revealed, she's gotten a lot of attention. She's given many interviews explaining her take on racism and identity. She's published a book. For reasons you're about to hear, Seattle writer Ijeoma Oluo has wanted nothing to do with Rachel Dolezal. But then one of her editors, Charles Mudere at The Stranger, asked Ijeoma to go to Spokane, spend the day with Rachel Dolezal at her house and interview her. Ijeoma says that unwanted pitch came to her at just the right time.
I was having a day where I was really incredibly frustrated with the story as it was, and it had just been announced that she had changed her name to Nkechi, which is my sister's name. And that kind of like, that hit in a really raw place, especially because my sister lives in Nigeria and has her whole life. And she lives the honest truth of Nigeria. She lives under, you know, the violence and the fear and the instability. There's no jobs. You know, it's a basic police state in the area that she's at. Our father's, you know, tomb was burned to the ground a couple of years ago. She lives in that every day. And then this white woman changed her name to my sister's name because she thought it would make it easier for her to get a job. And it was
because Rachel Dolezal is such a toxic name.
Yeah. Which, by the way, is just the worst logic anyways. It makes no sense. You don't change your name to Nkechi to make it easier to get a job.
And in Spokane or any place else
yeah,
in America.
Yeah. I've lived with the name Ijeoma, which is actually easier than Nkechi. And I know it does not make it easier to get a job. And also, it's not as if people are going to be any more put at ease when a white woman shows up to an interview named Nkechi. But I was really frustrated like that day. And it had just interrupted even more of my life. I was getting ready for an event. My phone had this alert. And right as I was getting up to speak, like my phone buzzes with this name change. So I got called at the right time. And then the other reason why I said it is because Charles Mudere asked me to.
And your editor at The Stranger.
Yes. And he is an amazing editor. And I really wish Seattle appreciated him more because he is a man of uncommon talent in this city, and really underrated, and especially as an editor. And I trust him. And he's the only black editor I've had the pleasure of working with for probably about 2 years now. And he saw something there and I couldn't see it, but I trusted him. And so I decided to take the leap.
Given all that, what did you ask Rachel Dolezal?
You know, what I tried to ask her, in all honesty, was I did a lot of research and I read her book and I watched a lot of interviews. And I basically asked the questions that Black America has been shouting at their television screen every time she gets on there that aren't being asked. And if they are being asked, she was able to kind of evade it without answering and nobody pushed further. And watching it, I realized she's managed to avoid any of these really difficult questions while also claiming to be an expert on these subjects.
And so, black history professor.
Exactly. And so basically, I just, you know, I took all of the questions that I've always had in my head that other people have had in their heads, other black people have had in their heads. And I just came with those. And I thought maybe if I'm sitting in her living room, it'll go differently. Maybe it'll be a little bit harder for her to avoid answering them.
And what did you learn?
I mean, I was actually a little surprised, and I don't think I would have been able to write an essay if I wasn't. If I just came and it confirmed what I had suspected, it wouldn't have been worth it for me or I think anyone else. I had suspected to find just, you know, a nice white lady who really loved black people a bunch and just took it a little too far. And, you know, I am a mixed race black woman with a white mom who, when I was born, lived with, you know, hundreds of Nigerians in this apartment complex that for some reason only Nigerians lived in. And she loved it, you know, and she dressed up in, you know, the traditional clothing, learned how to cook the food. And I thought maybe if like my mom had kind of lost a grip with reality, this is what Rachel Dolezal would be. You know, like mm-hmm. I really actually came, as frustrated as I was with the concept and the discussion, I came with a pretty sympathetic view towards her as a person because of that history. And I thought maybe that's just what it is. Maybe she just doesn't quite get it. And I actually left thinking, no, this is someone who has decided that blackness is hers and that she can do it better. And I really left feeling, I mean, almost from about 10 minutes in, she doesn't like actual black people and she doesn't like being challenged by black people. And she gets very defensive about it and really feels like, how dare you? You know, I've done all this for you.
I want to understand that, because even if she is wrongheaded, yeah, a listener might ask, how can you say she doesn't like black people?
Yeah.
I mean, she has devoted her life to trying to understand the black experience and do some healing.
Yeah. You know, I think like what a lot of people may not understand, and I think a lot of people in communities of color know, there's the concept of the white savior. There's the person who comes to save you. And they say they're doing it out of love, but they're really doing it out of a sense of self-importance and a sense of superiority. I am doing this for you because you can't do it for yourself. And even if you, you know, read her book, which, I mean, it may not be worth it to read the book. It's a really bad book. But she talks at length about, you know, listing every tiny thing she's ever done for black people, but at the same time talks about black human beings in a very dismissive and condescending tone. So she will talk about, and she did this in person with me a couple of times, she's done this in other interviews, she basically writes off black people who don't accept her as people who haven't read up enough on race theory. They just don't know. They're uneducated and they don't want to know. Like she actually said, you know, they haven't read those books and they probably never will. She talked about how she's going to South Africa to start her book tour because South Africans are just more evolved on race than black Americans are, which is an absolutely insulting, you know, thing to say, not only for black Americans, but it's also an erasure of how incredibly horrific race relations happen to be in South Africa right now. You know, she talks about in her book about a light-skinned woman who was hard on her in an interview, and she said she's obviously trying to prove her blackness to darker-skinned people. Then she talks about dark-skinned black women saying they're trying to feel better about themselves and increase their self-esteem by making her look bad. I mean, if you read through the entire thing, she talks about divorcing her husband, and one of the reasons why they got a divorce was because he wasn't quote-unquote black enough. This is a man who's been black his entire life, and she was blacker than him, and he resented it. This is what she says. I mean, it's incredibly insulting. And when you're sitting with her and talking with her, you get that very much that same vibe. Oh, you just don't know. You just aren't smart enough. And it was incredibly insulting.
We're talking about the interview that our guest Ijeoma Oluo did in the house of Rachel Dolezal in Spokane. And you talked about, you said you asked the questions that Black America has been shouting. And most Black Americans might agree with you, I don't know. At least a few rich, famous Black Americans have supported her. For example, Rihanna. I think she was a bit of a hero. This is Rihanna talking about Rachel Dolezal. I think she was a bit of a hero because she flipped on society. Is it such a horrible thing that she pretended to be black? Black is a great thing, and I think she legit changed people's perspectives a bit and woke people up.
Yeah, you know what was interesting is I think partially when Rihanna said that, that was closer towards the beginning of this entire scandal, and I don't know if she saw or a lot of people saw that basically what we've had for the last 2 years is discussions on black female identity surrounding a white woman. And I don't know if people understand how painful that is. Black women are so invisible. And if you look at the state of black women, it didn't increase discussions about why black women account for half of all murders of women in the U.S., even though we're only about, 8% of the population. Nobody asks about why so many of us, 60 plus thousand of us, are missing right now. Nobody didn't increase any of that discussion about why we have one of the highest, you know, infant mortality rates and death and childbirth. And nobody asked any of these questions. Why
this didn't strike a blow for
no
awareness or colorblindness or anything.
No, all it did is it changed the discussion to whether or not a white woman could be us, a white woman who will never, ever have to suffer the way we have. In fact, it sucked up all of the conversation about black female identity and turned it into, oh, well, if you believe in this, you should welcome this woman. Oh, you know, what about Rachel Dolezal? And we've still been suffering in silence. We've been dying. We've been abused. We've been murdered. And nobody has cared. And to see that, you know, I don't think anyone who really cares about black women can look at these last 2 years and say that this conversation has done anything to benefit us. All it has done is erase us.
So to this idea, and as you know, this is very common among well-meaning white people, that let's say, Igioma, that you would like a future where people are not stuck being black or white. If Rachel Dolezal's attempt was a terrible idea, what is a good idea?
A good idea is to try and tear down the actual system itself within your privilege. It does mean no good to have a white person become black and become basically just as powerless as I am to change the system. You work within your privilege. I wish that was something that a lot of allies and white people who really care understood. People avoid recognizing how much privilege they have because it makes them feel bad and it makes them feel guilty. It makes them feel like maybe they haven't earned everything they have. And I get that feeling because we all have privilege. I have privilege in many different ways as well. But the truth is that where you have privilege, you also have power to change the system, right? I don't have, like, Bill, you are a white man. You have so much more access, even having this show, right? And helping decide what gets discussed and what doesn't, what voices you bring on, right? Who your team is, who you hire. You have a huge amount of power. And that can make you feel bad if you realize how much less power people have. But also, that means every day you come to work with an opportunity to change that system and pull it apart piece by piece. Because I can't suddenly decide I want a radio show and make that happen, right? Yeah. And if you decided, no, I'm just going to give that up and I'm going to show solidarity by pretending like I have as much power as black people, you just create an empty chair for another white person to sit in and not care. But every day you wake up with opportunities to elevate people and help people from your position. And that is where I wish people would understand. It doesn't help me to have someone come and sit next to me and be just as handcuffed as I am. It helps me if people take the power they have and use it for good.
This story got more than a million views on The Stranger in 2 days. In local media, that's gigantic. Why do you think it attracted so many people? And how do you feel about that?
I'm really kind of torn about it. And that's part of the reason why I said, like, I mean, I'm doing this interview because I love you guys. And it's the only one I'm really doing because I don't want to talk about it anymore. You know, I did it in part because I really just want this conversation to stop and get back to important things. So, you know, it's kind of bittersweet because, especially as a black writer who's been writing for a while, and honestly, I think been writing really good pieces, like to have this be the piece, right, can be really frustrating because, you know, once again, I can always tell if I write something that doesn't directly capture the fascination of white people where they can see themselves in it. Yeah. And I've written some really good pieces about really important issues, not just issues about black America. You know, I wrote a piece about discrimination against Sikhs in America. And they, you know, they've been suffering horrifically since 9/11, even though they're not Muslim. And almost nobody read it because people were like, not me. It doesn't appeal to me. It has nothing to do with my day-to-day life. And I would love for people to be able to have the sort of empathy and see the shared humanity enough to care about things that don't just absolutely fascinate them. But on the flip side, a lot of the people who really love this are black women. And that has made it worth it to me. A lot of people have reached out to me saying I had given up hope that I would ever see my frustrations voiced on this issue. I'd given up hope that I was ever going to see real questions asked of this woman. And you finally did it. And this is what we were waiting for. And a lot of people were really skeptical when I said I was doing the interview. And they were like, you know, you didn't let us down. And that to me has made it worth it. But it's still something that is bittersweet for me, career-wise in general and as a black woman.
Hmm. Yeah. What if this article is what if this article is the last word on Rachel Dolezal? We never talk her about her again, and it's your best known work. How'd you feel about that?
I mean, you know, I would feel good. That was the only way I was going to see this as a success is if at least it was going to give some people the space to be able to set it aside. And that's what it did for me. I went there and as I left and, you know, it was an incredibly grueling process. It was a really painful day. It was a really tough interview. And I think not only for me, but I think probably for Rachel as well. And at the end of the day, 4 hours of being there, I was exhausted and I left and I was just thinking, what just happened? And I really had to sit with it for a day or two and go back over all of the notes and go back over the transcripts. And then once it clicked that absolutely nothing extraordinary had happened, that was what was extraordinary to me when I realized that it was just run-of-the-mill stuff that maybe had been taken a little bit further. All the interactions that you read in the piece are, you know, different flavors of interactions that most Black people have with white people all of the time. Yeah. And it's just someone who kind of took it to 11. And then I was able to get peace myself. Then I was able to be like, okay, I know what this is. And it's in a way, it's disappointing, but it's also reaffirming. It's disappointing to realize that it could be so banal, that it's basically just a woman who thought she could be better at being Black than Black people could. And that would be enough to capture the imagination of an entire country for 2 years. But then I was able to let it go. And then I was able to just see it as more of the ridiculousness that we get ourselves caught up in when we discuss race and all the ways we try to avoid talking about real issues. And I do really believe that this gave the majority of especially white America an excuse to ignore real issues on race. This was a way they could talk about race without actually talking about race. And if instead they could talk about whether or not it's okay for this one woman to be accepted within the Black community, instead of talking about how we're dying, you know, it was a nice respite for them. It was a good way to turn something that had before been filled with guilt and kind of this empty hand-wringing that they had into a source of entertainment. And when you see it that way, it becomes sad and it becomes tiring, but you also can just kind of let it go and get back to focusing on what you were focusing on before. And if it does that for people, especially for Black people who have really felt haunted and chased by this subject, you know, more power to them. And also, you know, to transgender people who've really been haunted by this story as well. And it has been used to attack them daily. And I hope that if it can help them set it aside and get back to the real work of fighting for justice, then it'll be worth it for me.
Because people with power in different ways want to say, see, where our thumb is not on you.
Exactly. And it was a real, you know, you could see it was starting to play into this whole, how can Black people be so upset about racism if they're not going to let this white person be Black? Isn't that reverse racism? Isn't that reverse discrimination? It became a really easy way to not have to focus on the issues without saying you're not focusing on the issues. And you got to check that box and say you talked about race today, but you didn't talk about race today. And you know, the more that she was playing into that, and it, when I started seeing comments talking about how Black Americans aren't evolved enough on race and things like that, coming from someone who says she loves Black people, I realized that she was going to do whatever she could to keep herself in the limelight. And even if that meant selling out every Black person that she claimed to love, she was going to do that. And the conversation was actually harming us.
You've said that it's white supremacy that has decided Rachel Dolezal was newsworthy, including the fact that you were assigned to it. First of all, what does your assignment editor say about that?
You know, Charles was fully supportive. I mean, he got it. I think, you know, he definitely wanted this piece. He saw it in a certain way. There's no way it would have been funded if it wasn't, you know, I mean, they flew me out there and paid for a hotel and things like that. It wouldn't have been funded if it wasn't something really fascinating to white people. And he got it. And that's, you know, one thing I really want to stress is part of the reason why this conversation has lasted as long as it has, part of the reason why we're just now 2 years in getting to these real questions and having people, you know, people are aghast and people are, I had no idea this is what it was, but I can see it so clearly. It's because we haven't really been able to get Black reporters and Black journalists in to meet with her. I can count like maybe three that I've seen total in the last 2 years. And if they are able to, it's for some sort of sensationalist piece. But the truth is that mainstream media has basically been sending in white journalists. And it's not to say that white journalists aren't good journalists, but they don't have the framework and the background and the knowledge about these issues from a Black perspective to ask these questions. That whole story, that whole side of the story has been missing. We've been talking about Black womanhood without Black women. And, you know, we do that because I think it's comfortable. It's a framework that everyone can sit in a room. If you have a room full of white people deciding how the story is going to go, you don't know what you don't know. And I don't think people have realized that this whole piece of the conversation has been missing, because the truth is that Black people are completely absent from the majority of writing rooms and editing rooms. And I was so fortunate that Charles asked me to do this, and I wouldn't have done it for any other editor. I wouldn't have worked with any other editor because I honestly didn't have to explain anything to him. I didn't have to say where I was coming from. In fact, he was able to edit in a way that brought me closer to what I meant than I was when I sent him the pieces. But I really hope that other publishers who are looking at this piece, and I've had people reach out to me and ask if I will write for them and all of this, they're suddenly realizing I exist. If you're looking at this piece and wondering why this is the story that got a million views in 2 days and yours didn't, look at your newsroom. Look at your editing room. You can't just bring in a Black person when Beyonce does something interesting and have them write a piece and then send them back. We have very talented Black writers who can't afford to stay writing because they are never hired for staff positions. They have no benefits. The pay is low. They're only brought in for these niche topics. We have no Black editors in the room. So even if they are asked to write these pieces, their voices are muted and shifted away from their, you know, what they are actually trying to say. And so if you're looking at this and wondering why the response was so big, I think in part it's because people read an authentic piece on an issue about Black women by a Black woman and edited by a Black editor. And people can recognize authenticity. And if you want that, you're going to have to change the way in which you report stories.
Good use of my microphone. Rachel Dolezal is in your rearview mirror. Now what do we do? What are you looking forward to?
You know, I'm looking forward to people actually reaching out to Black women and wondering what life is actually like for Black women. There are so many amazing writers out there, and you just need to go find them. Get on Twitter. I mean, we all live on Twitter. It's one of the few places where I think Black women have a chance to really build up a platform. But, you know, there's a lot of Black women activists and writers who are out there every day. We've been doing the work for a long time. And if we look at like Imani Gandhi, Feminista Jones, there are so many talented Black women really doing hard work. And I hope that now people will say, oh, OK, now what's the real experience? People have been working really hard for a long time.
We've gone through the not real.
Yeah. And trust me, it's much more rewarding. It's the world I live in, and I love it. You know, there are so many people working so hard and just coming up with amazing ideas and doing it with humor and with joy and with gusto and with the love of community that you really have in order to be able to do this work effectively. So I really hope that up next, you know, people really start looking and saying, oh, well, this is a really insightful piece. I actually learned something. And I am hearing from white people saying, I learned a bit about how white supremacy works, and they want more. If you want more, find these voices. There are people who've been doing this for a very long time. And I really hope that people actually do that, you know, start, you know, pick up some Michelle Alexander books, you know, and really start learning about the system. You know, pick up some Kimberly Crenshaw and really start reading about intersectionality. And you will find the world will open up to you of ideas that you had never considered, experience you had never considered. And it's going to ring so true because it's going to be so authentic. And I really hope that people do that because we have been putting out so much work for so long. And all we really need is a little help to get it out to the masses. And we need platforms and we need the ability. We need people to share it, people who normally don't interact with that work. So I hope people do that because the answers are in there. Right now, we're in a state where this country is trying so hard to figure out the next steps, especially left liberal America, right? And they're saying, what do we do? What do we do? What do we do? The truth is that Black women have been saying what to do for so long. And that hasn't changed because what you're fearing right now, we've been suffering under for a very long time. So find their work. Listen to them. You know, the answers are there and it's been written beautifully. And you will be amazed. Like the world will make more sense to you. You will feel better. It's not easy reads, but you will feel better because suddenly you will have some answers for why things are the way they are.
Ijeoma Oluo wrote this piece for The Stranger. She's a writer and the editor at large for The Establishment. It's always good to talk with you, Ijeoma. Thank you.
Thank you.